persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning, we have learned that some liberals choke on even a small piece of Pastor Scheidbach's mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Are you ready for your great adder massage?
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Paul Revere's lantern lighter here, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Okay, we'll be digging a bit deeper into the Californicating Judge Walker decision to walk all over. Well, actually, it might be better to say to wipe his feet on the doormat that he has made out of 7 million California voters, spit in the face of common law, mocking natural law, and making void the law of nature's God. But first things first, we'll take care of some important updates on stories we are following with interest. Birther update. A recording of baby Obama crying. Baby Barry at birth. A team of highly skilled audio techs separated out of the recording voices of at least two people talking. The languages used were Swahili, mixed with some English spoken with a thick African accent. An accent peculiar to Kenya. Just kidding. Okay, that was cute, but this isn't. Obama has spent over $1 million to keep his records hidden from the public, while claiming that in those records there is nothing for him to hide. We are talking about passports, school records, and the elusive long-form birth certificate, you know. Records that normal people with nothing to hide willingly open to public scrutiny, especially public officials. The Kool-Aid sipped by libs through the straw of the Obama propaganda machine was sufficient to put enough Americans in a doze to sleepily elect into office this Manchurian candidate, but it seems to be wearing off. Although some have slipped into a coma from which they have yet to recover, many are waking up with a huge hangover of voters' remorse. Two private investigators working independently have noticed that Obama is using a Social Security number that is set aside for applicants in Connecticut, while there is no record he ever had a mailing address in that state. The plot thickens, as they say. Oh, the hounds that chase him like wolverines. They pursue relentlessly this pitiful man who has so many enigmas related to his true identity. The best hounds among them have difficulty sorting out the scent that leads to a single clear answer to the question, who is this guy? Now we discover the Social Security number Obama uses is questionable. It is one that is, quote, set aside for applicants in Connecticut, end quote. Only people who apply for a Social Security number in Connecticut could have legally gotten this Social Security number, you know, the one Obama uses. And from what I'm reading, you have to have a Connecticut address to secure this particular Social Security number. But Barack Hussein Obama, a.k.a. Barry Sotero, has never had an address in Connecticut. Oh, what is going on here? Mr. President alleged to produce your long-form birth certificate and end this nonsense. But now, alas, it's probably too late. Perhaps you could have succeeded at hiding the fact that your parents renounced your U.S. citizenship when they applied for you to secure Indonesian citizenship, which is the reason you were enrolled in school in Indonesia as a citizen of Indonesia. And it is, no doubt, the basis for your foreign exchange student scholarship to college. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we set out to deceive. But, well, here's a headline that tells us it's all okay. Quote, Obama enjoying eligibility dispute, end quote. Really? All this confusion that Obama has created by so vigorously hiding his birth, school, and travel records, you know, like a wrecking ball crashing into the Constitution over and over, and he's enjoying all of this? Is he such a sadistic, malevolent narcissist that he sits back and chuckles while we go scurrying about trying to track down his identity, when all along the simple evidence establishing his citizenship is hidden only because he enjoys all this noise being made about his status as a natural-born citizen? A while back, Peck joined the birther bashers, believing this is all a red herring intended to divert us from the truly evil designs of the president alleged to destroy our representative republic and make a mockery of our Constitution. At one time, Beck thought Obama was cleverly tricking us into wasting our energy on this diversion. Now, I think Beck has taken a bit of a different tack on this lately. At least he's no longer openly bashing birthers as foolish buffoons. But I say, if Beck is right, it only adds fuel to the fire of the argument that Obama is purposely attempting to make a mockery of our Constitution. The Constitution clearly states that only a natural-born citizen of the United States can be president. What are the criteria for determining whether one is a natural-born citizen? You might think the 14th Amendment makes it clear, quote, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States, end quote. However, the issue is not citizenship. Rather, it is citizenship status conferred by birth. What constitutes a natural-born citizen? The question of what constitutes a natural-born citizen is not answered in the 14th Amendment. So what does constitute a natural-born citizen? Historically, those born within the borders of a country are presumed to be citizens of that country. However, the earliest record we have, that I know about, of what was the consensus opinion of nations on this question in the period leading up to the formation of our country is found in a famous treatise titled The Law of Nations, written in 1758. The author, Emmerich de Vitae, I believe he's French, defined natural-born citizen as, quote, those born in the country of parents who are citizens, end quote. Now, this informs us of the consensus of the opinion of nations at the time of our founding, but what answers the specific question for Americans? On March 26, 1790, Congress recognized the citizenship of children born to U.S. parents overseas, quote, the children of citizens of the United States that may be born beyond sea or out of the limits of the United States shall be considered as natural-born citizens, provided that the right of citizenship shall not descend to persons whose fathers have never been resident in the United States, end quote. Now, it may well be that the president-elect was born in the U.S., but his father was never a legal resident, so he would not qualify as a natural-born citizen. But we don't really know now, do we? Why? Well, because the president, who promised to be the most open, has proved, in fact, to be the most secretive president in the history of America, and he refuses to release his records. It is looking more and more like some people who have a stake in bringing America to her knees are handling Obama, and it appears that the objective is to bring America to her knees facing Mecca. Now, this brings me to an update on another important story. By now, you all know that Faisal Abdul Rauf is the imam at the center of the controversy storm over plans to build a $100 million mosque virtually across the street from Ground Zero. Inside of it, directly in the flight path of one of the jets that hit the towers. In fact, someone calculated that the plane would have flown through the top of the mosque had it been present at the time. I mean, some people are really looking close at this thing. Rauf said right out loud in front of that devil he worships, Allah, and everyone, that while he did not think he would say that the Americans and others who died in the 9/11 attack deserved to die, nevertheless, America, by her foreign policy, was an, quote, accessory to the crime, end quote. He also said that Obama bin Laden was, quote, made in America, end quote. No wonder the liberals love this guy. He's a card-carrying blame America firster. When it comes to Hamas, and in case you don't know your Hamas, that's the organization that, quote, intentionally slaughters civilians, has been designated as a terrorist organization by the U.S. government, and advocates the extermination of both Israelis and Jews, end quote. So now that you know your Hamas, Rauf, the Ground Zero Mosque Imam, cannot bring himself to call Hamas a terrorist organization. His explanation for this bizarre equivocation, quote, the issue of terrorism is a very complex question, end quote. Ha! I appreciate the simple and elegant clarity of Clifford May, writing for National Review Online, who in response to this ridiculous statement said, quote, no, actually, it's quite simple. Whatever your grievances, you do not express them by murdering other people's children, end quote. The complexity of the issue occurs in the mind of Muslims, or ideologically warped liberals, whose heart is corrupted by their embrace of evil, their willingness to cut all the cockatrice, as we say, which is a reference to a statement made by the prophet Isaiah that I won't go into, except to say there are people who have had their sympathies warped by accepting lies whispered into their ears by the serpent's forked tongue. They play with snakes and their thinking becomes confused so that they cannot focus on simple reality, a.k.a. truth. Now think about this. Here is a guy who cannot say that the Hamas practice of targeting innocents for slaughter qualifies them as a terrorist organization. Why? Because the issue is complex. What does that mean? What complicates something so basic? You see, moral ambivalence is the child created in the hearts of those with no moral clarity. Anyway, we know this character, Raouf, has ties with ISNA, that's the Islamic Society of North America, and the IIIT, and that's the International Institute of Islamic Thought. Both are organizations created by the Muslim Brotherhood. Oh yeah, the Muslim Brotherhood, committed to the ideology of its founder, Hassan al-Banna, who said, quote, "It is the nature of Islam to dominate, not to be dominated, to impose its law on all nations, and to extend its power to the entire planet," end quote. Now, that is the goal of Islam in America. Their goal is not merely to win converts to the Muslim faith. Their goal is to, quote, "impose its law on all nations," end quote. And the key word is impose. These characters want a mosque built on this particular location in order to make a political statement that the jihad attack on 9/11 was a triumph for the goals of the Muslim Brotherhood. We are under attack in the name of a Muslim God, Allah. Now, you have noticed the large number of liberal politicians who are insanely supportive of the Islamization of America. You know that right now the Justice Department refuses to prosecute associates of Obama who are, quote, "organizing flotillas and marches in support of the Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip," end quote. Now, the blockade is legal according to international law and necessary for Israeli security. An American professor at Columbia University, Rashid Khalidi, is participating in a plan to raise money to buy a U.S. ship that is to be used to break Israel's blockade. The ship is to be called the Audacity of Hope. Oh, yeah. This name was purposely chosen from Obama's autobiography. It's an honor to their secret agent planted in the Oval Office, headquarters for the jihad, Rashid. And even if only by acquiescence, his accomplice, Obama, are providing material support to Hamas, an organization committed to the goal of extermination for Israel and America, the great Satan, and to using terrorism as a means to that end. Now, I've got to go to a break, but here it is. You already know that the current New York mayor is spitting in the face of 70% of his constituency, virtually mocking those who object to building this mosque as a memorial to the triumph of jihad over America. You also know that most Democrat politicians are in bed with those who desire to Islam America, meaning to submit America into subjection to Sharia law. We know that Muslim money funded Obama's campaign with foreign Arab contributions, oil money from Arabia filtering into his campaign illegally, and that is the reason he refuses to open his campaign records. Arab oil money is buying a virtual harem of political whores in Washington. Traitors all. Bible thump alert. Bible thump alert. The love of money is the root of all evil. Liberals squawk about the evil of oil money, but turn their eyes away from the fact that Arab oil money is behind all this bowing toward Mecca nonsense that is going on in our country. And you can bet it is behind the building of that mosque at Ground Zero. And that is the reason they do not want you to know where the $100 million is coming from. Come on, open your eyes. The money we spend on oil from Arab nations is being used to Islam America, to Sharia law. I'll be right back.
The Brain Massage Show releases truth antibodies in the brain that attack and destroy liberal lies. Freely you have received, freely give. We don't charge for the Brain Massage Show, but that doesn't mean we don't have to pay to air them on the radio. Many have asked if they can help. Thank you. If you'd like to join them, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Any amount is welcome. Pastor Scheinbach is charging the gates of hell. Don't leave him hanging. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com to make a donation, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Need a brain massage? We've got one waiting for you right now. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, Brain Masseur, and Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter. I promised I would continue my analysis of Judge Walker's ruling here in California on Proposition 8. Last week, I pointed out the bigotry of Walker and his obvious bias. I mean, the fix was in at the start. Today, we begin looking more particularly at the law itself. Remember that Proposition 22 was a voter initiative similar to Proposition 8? In fact, they each defined marriage with identical language. The difference between 22 and 8 was that Proposition 8 amended the California Constitution with a definition of marriage as between one man and one woman. As an introduction to our discussion of the law side of this question, it is important to remember that a lower court, on the ground that it violated the California Constitution, struck down Proposition 22. An intermediary appeals court here in California reversed the decision against Proposition 22 because they had several disagreements with that court's interpretation of the equal protection provisions of the California Constitution. But you know, it's hard to find that appeals court ruling. I'd like to see it. If you find it for me, please email it to me, or at least a link where I can find it. As I pointed out last time, Walker et al. Refused to discuss the court's reasoning in that ruling, and I cannot find it anywhere. We do have the ruling of the California Supreme Court on Proposition 22, however, and Walker would rather not talk about the rationale or the reasoning, the arguments behind the appeals court reversal or the Supreme Court's subsequent ruling. Why? Remember, he just wanted to brush that aside, you know, saying, quote, the Court of Appeal reversed and the California Supreme Court granted review, end quote. Even though I overviewed it last time, we'll look at it more closely today. After Proposition 22 was upheld, several cases were filed, and the Supreme Court picked all these up and consolidated them into a case titled In Re Marriage Cases, or In Regards to Marriage Cases. In summary, this court agreed with the reversal of the original ruling against Proposition 22. Or in other words, they agreed with the ruling of the appeals court. The California Supreme Court went on to invalidate Proposition 22 anyway, and they argued it is because the California Constitution did not provide any authority to the state to differentiate between same-sex and opposite-sex couples. Now, the question before the court should have been, what was the compelling interest of the state to change the definition of marriage? Anyway, California already provides to queer unions the same rights and responsibilities of spouses. In January of 06, legislation went into effect in California that said, quote, registered domestic partners shall have the same rights, protections, and benefits and shall be subject to the same responsibilities, obligations, and duties under law, whether they derive from statutes, administrative regulations, court rules, government policies, common law, or any other provisions or sources of law as are granted to and imposed upon spouses, end quote. Now, in the case identified as in remarriage cases, the California Supreme Court admitted this, saying that California's domestic partnership legislation provides that, quote, a same-sex couple may enter into a legal relationship that affords the couple virtually all of the same substantive legal benefits and privileges and imposes upon the couple virtually all of the same legal obligations and duties that California law affords to and imposes upon a married couple, end quote. And then in a footnote, the court reasserted their acknowledgement for this fact, quote, the current California statutes grant same-sex couples who choose to become domestic partners virtually all of the legal rights and responsibilities accorded married couples under California law, end quote. The question is, since there is no, quote, substantial difference, end quote, in treatment between the so-called domestic partnerships and marriage, why did they not simply throw the matter out of court as moot, as a non-issue, and find what is obvious to anyone looking at this? It is not about personal rights. The court said so. It is about changing culture. They are attempting to use the courts to change public perception of homosexuality. They are attempting to force California voters to perceive homosexual domestic partnerships as equivalent or equal to heterosexual marriages. And this is something the court has no business getting into. So the court admits there is no violation of anyone's rights going on here. If every substantive right, privilege, responsibility, and so on is afforded to them as individuals and as partners, what exactly is the court addressing? Well, they decided the court needed to look into the question of whether the state has a compelling interest in using one word to identify opposite-sex unions and another term to identify same-sex unions. The Supreme Court defined the question before it to be, quote, whether our state constitution prohibits the state from establishing a statutory scheme in which both opposite-sex and same-sex couples are granted the right to enter into an officially recognized family relationship that affords all of the significant legal rights and obligations traditionally associated under state law with the institution of marriage, but under which the union of an opposite-sex couple is officially designated a marriage, whereas the union of a same-sex couple is officially designated a domestic partnership, end quote. Unbelievable. This means the court intended to rule on whether the state had a right to distinguish between same-sex partnerships and opposite-sex partnerships, not whether they had the right to distinguish them in terms of rights, privileges, and responsibilities, but listen, but whether the state's constitution gave it the power to call these obviously different unions by different names. They decided the state needed a compelling interest to defend its centuries-old traditional understanding of marriage against the demand of same-sex couples to change the meaning of a word, the meaning of which was never determined by the state in the first place, but has received its meaning by millennia of use in common parlance, and which by virtue of that authority has entered our legal definitions with long precedent in our courts, as in, for example, laws prohibiting polygamy or incest. The idea of marriage has always been understood in one certain way. But now, not to protect rights, since they all have the same rights as individuals and domestic partners, and by the way, not because of discrimination, as the court itself recognized that opposition to changing the meaning of the word marriage is not necessarily motivated by prejudice against homosexuals, but only for one reason. The court asked itself whether the state had the right under the California Constitution to say same-sex couples will be called domestic partnerships and opposite-sex couples will be called marriages. Anyway, the court decided that the California Constitution does not provide any legal basis for defining same-sex partners with one word and defining opposite-sex partners with another one. And this is the reason proponents of Proposition 22 decided to initiate Proposition 8 and provide for the court something in the California Constitution that does establish a legal basis for defining marriage as a union of opposite-sex couples. And that effort resulted in an amendment to the California Constitution from a voter initiative called Proposition 8 by the proponents and Proposition 8 by its opponents. You know, by the biased, prejudiced, hate-spewing homosexual propagandists. Now, the reason all of this is important is that Walker ignored the ruling of the appeals court and the ruling of the California Supreme Court and went back to that lower court that was reversed. He snubbed both of those higher courts and reasserted the argument of the court both the appeals court and the California Supreme Court rejected. The argument that denying homosexual unions the right to be legally called a marriage deprives them of an inalienable right under the equal protection and due process provisions of our Constitution. However, because a lower court cannot reverse a higher court, well, Walker had to pretend the case was different because it refers to the federal and not the state constitution. But that, of course, is a joke, since both constitutions are identical on the question of due process and equal protection. And, by the way, he introduced no new argument. Well, it's in appeal now with the Ninth Circuit, who, so far, has refused to allow the state to resume issuing marriage licenses to homosexuals. And we are waiting and wondering if they will reverse themselves now and decide that while Proposition 8 does not violate due process, nor does it violate equal protection provisions of the California Constitution, it does, somehow, strangely, violate those same provisions in the federal constitution. Well, you know, stranger things have happened. We can only hope that those arguing this case on our side will understand how rightly to frame the question put to the court. The issue is not whether the state has a compelling interest in regulating marriage. States have recognized a compelling interest in that matter for time immemorial. We don't accept polygamy or incest. We have laws that would have forbidden that gray-bearded Muhammad from marrying that 9-year-old little girl. If the courts continue down this path, however, there will be no defense against polygamy or incest or even more bizarre marriages as, for example, to one's animal, oak tree, or car. I mean, there are people who would marry their dog or cat if they could. So my first point is that the California Appeals Court and the California Supreme Court have already examined the question of whether Proposition 8 violates anybody's rights under due process or equal protection and found that it does not. After the Ninth Circuit Court renders its presumptive ruling against Proposition 8, we can hope that the United States Supreme Court will hear this case and we'll find that Judge Walker et al. Acted contrary to law, that, as a matter of fact, the state continues to have a compelling interest in regulating marriage and to protect the traditional meaning of marriage. At least let us pray that they will find that the homosexual has no right to impose a new definition of the word marriage on our culture through legal fiat. I mean, if they want to change the values and beliefs of a people, let them do it in the court of public opinion and debate the issue at the grassroots level with the rest of us. And do not allow them to storm the castle and take by force our culture as spoil, to spoil with their personal ideas of what we're all supposed to believe and think. Now, let's begin looking at Walker's specific arguments. I'm coming up on my time, so I'll only have time to get started on this. On page 5 of Walker's ruling, at lines 11 through 18, he delineates 3 reasons he offers to show Proposition 8 violates the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment of the Federal Constitution. Now, you know the 14th Amendment reads, quote, no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, end quote. Now, that's the first section of the 14th Amendment. All right, life, liberty, or property. Now, he does not say which of these rights Proposition 8 deprives. It can't be life or property, so it must be liberty. He thinks depriving homosexuals of the right to legally define their unions as marriages deprives them of liberty. Then he gives 3 instances to illustrate this, and we'll only have time to look at one of those today. He says, first, quote, it prevents each plaintiff from marrying the person of his or her choice, end quote. Excuse me? Okay, look, Proposition 8 does not deprive them of any of the rights, privileges, or responsibilities opposite-sex couples have under marriage, including choice of partner. As the California Supreme Court has said, they have virtually all the same rights, privileges, and obligations. It's about the use of the word marriage. This is about changing the meaning of a word, which is intended at length to change the perception of their behavior. So the first question is, in what way are the liberties of homosexuals deprived, without due process, because the state has decided to define marriage as between one man and one woman? If, for our purposes, we accept Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution as providing a legal definition for the word liberty, then liberty would be defined as, quote, all people are by nature free and independent with inalienable rights, end quote. Now, does this mean a person's liberty is deprived if they are not allowed to require society to agree with them about the meaning of the word marriage? If you say, well, why do you heteros get to define the word? Well, we didn't. It's the common law meaning of the word. We are not trying to change it. We are trying to keep you from changing it because we don't think you have the right to force us to accept your new idea of what marriage is. You see, you can do your thing, but you can't mess with our thing. You can shorten your life by half if you want to. You can suffer all sorts of miserable diseases that are related to your vile and perverted behavior, you know, between consenting adults in the privacy of your bedrooms. No one is going to put you in jail for that. This nation has made void the law of God in that matter. Bible thump alert! Bible thump alert! It is time for thee, O Lord, to work, for they have made void thy law, end quote. And you know what? You better pay attention because God is at work here. He built into nature a serious rebuke for your violation of the laws of nature, and he has warned you that you will face him one day and be judged by the law of nature's God. He finds your behavior detestable and will cast you into hell fire for your perversity. But we as a nation have made void the law of God, so we're not going to enforce it in any way. We've struck down all the anti-sodomy laws and so forth, so we leave your judgment to God. And God's judgment is all over you, but you're too blind to see it. You're like those Sodomites in Sodom who were struck with blindness by the angels of God and yet continued to grope for the door, driven by a rage of anger and resentment that Lot would dare presume to be a judge over your immoral behavior. That's where you are, and that's who you are. However, you do not have the liberty to force us to accept your lifestyle any more than we would presume to have the liberty to force our lifestyle upon you. The fact that you want to pervert the common law definition of marriage does not give you the right to do it. And my refusal to allow you to do it does not deprive you of any liberty, because you don't have liberty to change legal definitions. The understanding of marriage enters into our legal lexicons from common law and from natural law. You no more have the liberty to change the legal meaning of marriage than anyone else has the liberty to change the meaning of other legal terms. I mean, you certainly have a right to free speech and to present your arguments to persuade, but you do not have a right to change the legal definition of a word. Essentially, the strategy Walker decided upon to further his personal homosexual agenda has already failed to pass muster in the California Supreme Court and is likely to fail also in the United States Supreme Court. His argument is flawed from the very beginning. He is asserting that refusing to allow homosexuals to change the common law understanding and the natural understanding of an English word is somehow a fundamental and inalienable right. That is absurd on the face of it. We should not allow these characters to turn this argument, as Walker attempted to do, upside down and have us arguing about whether a queer has the liberty to choose his own partner. That is absolutely absurd. That is not the issue. No one is denying that to queers. It's a trick. The issue is that homosexuals have no business changing the centuries, the millennia-old meaning of a word by legal fiat. They can't demand recognition of the social status of marriage any more than polygamists may do so. Or incest marriages, or bestiality for that matter, you name it. Anyway, I've got to wrap it up. I've lit the lights in the belfry arch to signal the enemies on the march. Call in and let me know you see the lights are on. We got quite a few new callers, which is great, but I did miss some of my usual check-ins. So everybody, call in! The number is 1-888-770-8000. 1-888-770-8000. And the drill is this. You say, lights on, if you agree with me. And if you disagree with me, it's easy to register your thumbs down vote. Just say, lights off. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
Is going to church for you like walking on a treadmill? You keep going and going and getting nowhere? Have you and your family really grown closer to the Lord Jesus? Are you being challenged to grow in His grace? Or are you allowed to hide your lack of spiritual growth under the cover of so-called grace? Come to the church that makes a difference. Lighthouse Baptist Church, guiding families through the moral storms of our day. Call 347-9887 for more information. See our ad in the Coastal Pages directory.
For a complete brain massage experience, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is waiting to massage your brain